We're never without the need for words of exhortation, so I'll ask our brother Kevin to come forward.
Thank you.
Good morning, everyone. Before I forget, Rebecca was recently in Australia, and she was asked to relay the greetings from the Southern Highlands Ecclesia in Sydney. And especially to Mac and Sylvia, a brother, older, with glasses. He said you'd remember him for sure, and he wants to hear from you. So, so make sure you get back to him. I've started a study of Revelation recently. I feel like the clock is ticking. I'll be 50 in only 6 years, and I haven't mastered Revelation yet. So it was time to get started on that. And so that's where I'd like to draw our thoughts from this morning. And I imagine most of us have read or studied the letters to the churches a number of times. And one of the ways in which we can look at them is we can try and find our ecclesia as one of these. We can say that, oh, maybe we're the lukewarm ecclesia and that's not so good. Or maybe things are particularly bad in our city and we can say, well, this is where Satan's throne is and that is our struggle. Or maybe we're like Ephesus, that we're falling from our first love. And so one way to look at it is as a collective problem. Probably more likely the reality is that individuals among us fall into the different categories, the different struggles of the ecclesias that we have here. So some of us here might not have any of these problems, whereas individuals amongst us might be facing the particular struggles or the particular high points of some of these ecclesias. So one of the ways in which we'll be reading it this morning is trying to find our personal situation or find exhortation or lessons for our personal situation in these letters. But the main lens through which I'd like to look at these letters is of the sense of someone who is going to be away for a long time and has a final, urgent, short opportunity to relay some, I guess, just the most important things to him. And where I'm coming from is a couple of it's one parable that appears in a couple of the Gospels. In Matthew chapter 25, you don't need to look this one up. In Matthew 25:14, it says, "It will be like a man going on a journey, and he called his servants and entrusted them his property." And later on in verse 19, it says, "Now after a long time, the master of those servants came to settle accounts with them." And in Luke, it more explicitly says that the purpose of the parable was to make it clear to them that he was going to be away for a very long time. So in Luke chapter 19, it says, "As they heard these things, he proceeded to tell a parable because he was near to Jerusalem and because they supposed that the kingdom of God was to appear immediately. He said, therefore, a nobleman went into a far country to receive for himself a kingdom and return." So both these parables have the sense that Jesus was going to be gone for a very long time. And so opportunities to speak were going to be, he was not going to have a chance to speak to them for a long time. So in the letters to the churches in Revelation, I get that particular urgency that he has just a short opportunity to speak to us. There's only a few things that he can say. It's similar to the sense that we get at the end of the Gospel of John, where we have those chapters that it's like all red letters. And you can see that Jesus is sitting with his apostles. He's having dinner with them, and he knows that things are going to change radically. And there's just a pouring out of his heart of all these things that are so important to him that he wants to share with them in the time that he has. And so similarly, in these letters to the churches, it's a last opportunity for Jesus to share with us just, it's like the very top things that he has on his mind, because he knows that time is tight and space is short, and he has a lot of people that he needs to talk to. And so the lens through which I'd like to look at these is, if we have just limited opportunities to talk with each other, limited opportunities to be with our brothers and sisters, what would be the top things that we would try and talk about? What would be the things that we would definitely want to get to instead of, you know, all the other random things that we could talk about in our conversations, what are the indispensable parts of our conversations and our relationships with each other? And so I'd like to take, I guess, from these chapters some practical lessons about how we talk to each other, and just also learn a little bit about what are the things that are most important to Jesus in his relationship with us. One of the things that strikes me right away is that in almost every case, Jesus starts by saying something positive about them, by sharing some words of commendation. And it's not like he knew that he wouldn't get a chance to say what was on his mind. He knew how much time he had, and he knew he wouldn't be interrupted. But in 5 out of the 7 ecclesias, when he speaks to them, he starts by saying, I know your works, and these are the good things that I think you're doing. So if the unimaginable had happened, and he'd been cut off, and he hadn't been able to finish what he wanted to say, at least he would have started by saying something positive and commending his brothers and sisters. So in a letter to Ephesus, I know your works, your toil and your patient endurance, and how you can't bear those who are evil and are enduring patiently and not growing weary. In a letter to Smyrna in 2 verse 9, it says, I know your tribulation and your poverty, but you're rich. To the ecclesia in Pergamum in verse 13, I know where you dwell and that you hold fast to my name and that you did not deny the faith. Verse 19, I know your works, your love, your faith, your service, your patient endurance, your latter works exceed your first. Moving into chapter 3 in verse 8, I know your works. I know that you have a little power, and yet you've kept my word and not denied my name. So wherever he possibly can, when Jesus starts a conversation with these people that he loves, when time is very tight, he tries to say something positive about them. He searches for a way to commend them, to say, I know what you're going through, and you're doing this, and this is a great thing, and I see it, and I value it. So the practical lesson for us would seem to me that when we have scarce opportunities to talk to each other, when we have limited time with each other, it would seem that it's important to find ways to commend each other, to recognize the good things that each of us are doing. And this isn't kind of like a trivial, surfacey communication tactic to try and say something good so that the person lets down their guard. You know, it's not like, sister, you look radiant this morning, and it would have been great to see that radiance the last 4 weeks when you weren't here at all. And there is a practical aspect to that, that if we have to say something hard to someone, it's difficult to do that if that's the only part of our relationship. But that's not what Jesus is doing here at all. He knows what they're doing, and he starts by saying something positive and upbuilding without ulterior motive. When time is short, when there's an urgency to move forward with the conversation, very early in the conversation, our Lord finds a way to say something positive, commending us for what we're doing. Now, we have that in 5 of the letters, in a couple of the letters that we don't. And what I learned from this is that it's another sign of loving leadership that we also take time for the hard conversations. With the church at Ephesus, for example, he says, well, you've abandoned the love that you had at first in verse 4. With the ecclesia in Pergamum, he talks specifically about some of the brothers or sisters falling into moral issues or moral lapses. And how hard are those conversations to have? How hard is it when a brother or a sister is making some choices or falling into some moral issues? I know my tendency is to think, this doesn't seem like the good time for that. And maybe in the future there will be a better time for this conversation. And so we tend to postpone some of those hard conversations. And then at least it's been my experience that when it's, I guess, been my responsibility to have some of those conversations, I will postpone and postpone. And then by the time you think to actually have it, the horse is bolted and there's really nothing more to be done or said. But I think there's a lesson about courageous, loving leadership and relationships here that Jesus, in the short time that he has with them, is willing to take on the hard conversations, to talk about the difficult problems that we might have, or the, I guess, problematic choices we might be making. So again, if we back away and look at these ecclesials and take these letters according to a law of averages, as it were, it would suggest that in our group, because we're a reasonably sized group, there are probably some of us who need to be having those hard conversations with others among us. There's at least a few groups here that Jesus says, this is going on and we need to do something about it. In looking at other themes here, there's some ecclesias that, most of the ecclesias, he starts with positive words of commendation. With a few of them, he has some hard things to say. With every single one of these ecclesias, he ends with words of encouragement. So no matter where they are at, no matter what their situation is at the time, in every single conversation that he has with them, he ends with something that is forward-looking, that is optimistic, that is encouraging them to stick with it, to say that this is worth it and your efforts are recognized and the battle is worth fighting. I'll just read you a few of them, and you're familiar with these words. At the end of the letters, to the one who conquers, I will grant to eat of the tree of life, which is in the paradise of God. In verse 11, the one who conquers will not be hurt by the second death. Verse 26, the one who conquers and keeps my works until the end, I will give him authority over the nations. In chapter 3, verse 12, the one who conquers, I will make him a pillar in the temple of my God, and never shall he go out of it. And even the last church at Laodicea, which really seems to be in a poor state, words of encouragement at the end. The one who conquers, I will grant him to sit with me on my throne, as I also have conquered and sat with my Father on his throne. So again, if we're looking for themes or looking for guidance on how we should speak to each other when time is tight, when we have few opportunities to talk, Jesus always makes time to give us encouraging words. Look up, you know, lift our heads up out of the problems that we're in at a particular time and look forward to where we're heading, and we can get there. And he's optimistic. Even though the ecclesia seems to be, two of these are in a very poor state, he doesn't just end on a negative note that, well, it's all hopeless now. With them, he ends on a note that we can do this. Let's look forward to the hope that our Lord has given us. So there's a practical lesson there again for us. When time is tight and opportunities for meaningful conversation are scarce, it's worth considering whether when we speak to each other and in our conversations with each other, we're really trying to make sure we have something encouraging to say to each other, to keep each other walking along the road. One of the main themes that I find in these letters, though, is the exhortation to just hang in there, to persevere until the end. And this seems to be a theme in every single one of the letters to these brothers and sisters. The ecclesia in Ephesus, in verses 2 and 3, we're back in Revelation chapter 2, he says, I know your works and your toil and your patient endurance. In verse 3, he says, I know you are enduring patiently and bearing up for my name's sake. In chapter 2, verse 10, the ecclesia at Smyrna is exhorted to be faithful unto death. Again, the sense to stick with it until the end. Pergamum, in verse 13, is commended for holding fast. Thyatira, again, is exhorted in verse 25. I do not lay on you any other burden, only hold fast to what you have until I come. Sardis, again, is exhorted to strengthen the things that remain and to keep watch and to hold fast. Philadelphia is commended in verse 10 of chapter 3, you have kept my word with patient endurance. And in verse 11, they're told, hold fast to what you have so that no one may seize your crown. And I guess these verses particularly struck me because of how they seem to appear in every one of these letters. But I was raised in my experience in Christadelphia is very activity-oriented, very work-oriented, doing stuff all the time. And, you know, that might be my particular family culture, my particular ecclesial experience. But the fact that Jesus is reiterating so much in these letters, the message of just hang in there, hold fast, endure, be patient until the end, that suggests to me that within our communities and within our individual ecclesias, there's going to be a significant number of us who can only just hang in there. And that might be a stage that we're going through. It might be a stage with our faith or with our spirit. But Jesus isn't asking us to do more than just hang on and try and stay on the path until the end. And in these particular ecclesias, when he talks about their situation, you can see that they have individual problems, that some of the ecclesias are subject to persecution, some of them are smaller ecclesias and weak. And what that tells me is that among us, there will also be particular situations. We'll all have individual reasons for why we can just hang in there. It might be a health issue, it might be a marriage issue, it might be a spiritual issue, it might be an emotional issue, it might be work, there's many reasons for which we would all have particular circumstances, but the repetition of this message tells me that Jesus knows what we're going through, and if all we can do right now is hang on, that's okay. There will be many of us for which that is the situation. So two, I guess, main messages for me from this is if we are one of these people, if our situation right now is such that we feel that we're just barely hanging on, Jesus knows that. And he knows that, and he's telling us that not to stress about it, I guess, not if we're not the most active member in the ecclesia at a particular time, if all we can do is hang on, that's okay. One verse you can maybe read with me in Hebrews chapter 12, talking about the experience of Jesus himself. Hebrews chapter 12, it says, therefore, verses 1 and 2, since we are surrounded by so great a cloud of witnesses, let us lay aside every weight and sin which clings so closely, and let us run with endurance the race that is set before us, looking to Jesus, the founder and perfecter of our faith, who for the joy that was set before him endured the cross, despising the shame, and is seated at the right hand of the throne of God. And so one of the things that I take from those verses is that even for Jesus himself, there was at least a period in his life, if not more, where all he did was endure, was just stay on and not fall off the tracks. And he did it for the same thing that, I guess, for the forward focus of the kingdom, which is the type of encouragement that he himself gives to us, for those of us who may be just enduring. So some of us will be in that situation. And for the rest of us who are maybe not at a particular stage in our spiritual life where all we are doing is just hanging on, the fact that he repeats this message so much in this letter suggests to me that there's a significant number of others in our community for whom that is the situation. There's going to be a significant number of brothers and sisters in our ecclesia here who need our strength and not our criticism. They need our compassion and not our nagging. They need quiet words of commendation and hope and encouragement. There's going to be a significant number of people among us who need our help just to keep their noses above the water. And I'd like to finish back in Hebrews again. The with verses we know well in chapter 4. Since then, we have a great high priest who has passed through the heavens, Jesus, the Son of God. Let us hold fast to our confession. For we don't have a high priest who's unable to sympathize with our weaknesses, but one who in every respect has been tempted as we are, yet without sin. Let us then with confidence draw near to the throne of grace, that we may receive mercy and find grace to help in time of need.